is the Victorian Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
Good afternoon and Merry Christmas Eve to all of you who are listening. My name is Annie Brown and I've got a Country Hour Christmas special for you today, because one of the best things about this time of year is enjoying the food. And farmers, you're the ones who make it, the producers. So we'll check in with a few. On the menu today, I've got ham from an award-winning piggery in the southwest of the state, some delicious cheeses from Gippsland, fresh seafood from Port Ferry, and to top it all off, a tipple of 100-year-old brandy. Also, something a little bit lighter today, we've got some Christmas crackers for you, some jokes, some little funny things to make you smile on this Christmas Eve. But being the Country Hour, I've rural-fied them a bit. I've put the Country Hour lens over them with a theme of farming. And so I encourage you to text in with your answers, or if you've got any of your own jokes, please be PG rated as well, appropriate for broadcast. I did ask a few people this and they gave me some jokes that were not appropriate for broadcast. The text line 0467842722. Let's kick it off though. Let's pull a bonbon and start with one. Ooh, feels like Christmas almost. Here's one for you. Did you hear about the magic tractor? I'll tell you about it after we check in with the fish market next on the Country Hour.
The Country Hour, celebrating 80 years in 2025.
My name's Richard Jackson. I'm a retired agricultural consultant, now living in Melbourne. Worked in Gippsland and then worked all over Australia. And when I moved to Melbourne, I felt very disconnected from agriculture because I couldn't hear the ABC Country Hour. Somebody told me about the app, so I hooked into the app and now I can listen to it as often as I like, or listen to the Interstate Country Hour programs on the ABC, and it's just terrific. Got the phone in the pocket with the ABC Country Hour going, and sometimes people stare at me, but nevertheless, it keeps me in touch, and I really love that because I might have retired, but I'm still totally interested in agriculture and what happens. And the Country Hour gives a blend of all sorts of information, good and bad, but it's most important to keep up, and that's what the ABC Country Hour does, thanks to you.
80 years of the Country Hour.
Let's head to the southwest coast now, to Port Ferry, where seafood producers are working really hard to keep up with the high Christmas demand. Vibrant red Christmas crayfish, fresh oysters, and many, many, many prawns, a Christmas staple. Ken Schwarzenberg is a fisherman from Off the Boat Port Ferry. He joins us now. Welcome, Ken, and Merry Christmas Eve.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
How has your week been, Ken? Have you been out fishing every day?
Yeah, it's been hectic. The seas have been rough, and we're lucky to keep up with these crayfish. They're buying them as quick as hot donuts, I tell you.
How are the crayfish looking? In good quality?
Oh, yeah, they're always good down here. These are the best in the world, the Southern Rock Lobster. Oh, yeah, they're beautiful.
Delicious. And I guess this is a tough question because it must just feel like a lot, the volume is a lot at the moment, but how much seafood would you sell over the Christmas period?
Oh, God, a couple of ton of prawns. We've got fresh flathead and gummy shark. We just got 500 kilo gummy shark off the local boat, just come in a day ago. We've been flat out filling and all that up. That's been selling unbelievable, and flathead, and yeah, no, we're lucky to keep up.
And the stocks have been quite good. It's been quite easy to get it all in.
Yeah, well, there's no fishermen left anymore, so there's plenty of crayfish for the ones that are left.
Well, it's good for the few fishermen left, I guess, then. But yes. How would you describe the Christmas season for you?
It's been very busy. It's a lot busier than last year. People are spending a lot more, and there's a lot more people in Port Ferry. Like, we don't normally start till Boxing Day. They don't get to Port Ferry, but this year they've been flat out all week.
So people are coming a bit earlier than usual?
Yes, yeah, a lot earlier.
Have you any indication why that is, or just a different year?
Oh, well, just a different year. I suppose people are, you know, holidays, they've got a bit more money to spend for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, it's good to hear, yeah. I guess, you know, what's the most in demand, would you think, this year in terms of the seafood you catch?
Oh, our flathead and gummy and craze, just like craze. We can't keep up with craze.
Crazy for craze. Has that changed over the years? Have you seen a big shift in sort of different tastes?
Nah, well, it's more demand for the craze than ever. I don't know why, but people, like, I reckon the prawns are just as tasty and half the price, but people just want crayfish.
I like it. Crayfish. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever had crayfish for Christmas, Ken.
Oh, God, you're missing out. People have it for lunch, Christmas lunch. Yeah.
Maybe I'm a bit too landlocked up in Albury Wodonga. I'm a bit too far away from the ocean for fresh crayfish for me. I guess also this is the time of year where we kind of reflect back on the year that's passed, year 2025. How's it been for you and for other fishermen around the area?
It's been a very trying year. Like, the government's forcing everyone out. Like, I'm the last fisherman left here out. 15 years ago, there was 15 bloody fishermen. And, you know, it's getting harder and harder for the fishermen to survive. They're shutting areas down and shutting things down and bloody, yeah, it's just getting harder and harder. But anyway, we're just trying to survive the best we can.
How long have you been in the industry?
I've been fishing for 50 years.
Wow. Always in Port Fairy?
No, I was in Port Phillip Bay. I was kicked out of there 30, 40 years ago. They kicked us out of there. I was a scallop fisherman down there, and that was shut down. Then I come up here. Now they're trying to shut us down up here. So, anyway, every fisherman's just trying to survive. Why? That's our lifestyle, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And what's the plan for tomorrow, Ken? What do you do on Christmas Day?
Well, I've still got to go and catch a few crays first thing in the morning. Then I'll be into a lot of ales.
Sounds good. Well, all the best for the rest of your Christmas season. Appreciate your time. I know it's a very busy day being Christmas Eve for you, so appreciate you taking some time to talk to us and give us an update.
All right. Merry Christmas and good luck to everyone.
Thanks, Ken. Merry Christmas too. That's Ken Swarschenberg. He's from Off the Boat in Port Fairy, a fisherman there, trying to keep up with that really strong demand we get for seafood. We love it this time of year. Do you eat crayfish? What seafood do you eat at Christmas? I want to know. You can text in 0467 842 722. Like I said, I'm up in Albury Wodonga. I'm a little bit far away from the ocean, unfortunately, to get really good fresh seafood. But nonetheless, we all have our little Christmas traditions. But yeah, I'd love to hear. 0467 842 722. Also, we are playing, we're giving you a few Christmas crackers to try and lighten the mood a bit today. And I gave you a bit of a hint before we crossed to Ken. Do you want to know the answer?
I'm a little Christmas cracker. Hanging on a Christmas tree, just a little Christmas cracker. That's me, a bang a bang a bang.
The joke was, did you hear about the magic tractor? You should have. The magic tractor. It turned into a field. There you go. I've got a few more coming in on the text line as well. I'd love to hear your Christmas crackers. I want them rural-fied, though. Country Hour themed with like an agriculture, primary industries theme. 0467 842 722. Hi, Annie. Us reindeer would like to know if they're petty carrot for we get hungry working all night. Thanks, Rudolph. Have a Merry Christmas. Thanks for that. We've got a few more jokes coming in. One more. What do shrimp wear in the kitchen? I like this. This is a seafood themed one. I'll tell you the answer to that in a couple of seconds because we've got to keep going here on the Victorian Country Hour. We've got to talk ham now because it is really a Christmas staple as well. Australian Pork Limited, the peak body, said that around 1.6 million legs of ham are sold in the lead up to Christmas. Huge. So the demand for ham is great this time of year, and pork producers are working hard to get their legs out onto tables. Duncan Parry is the chief executive of Otway Pork. He told me this is by far the busiest time of year for them.
In some ways, preparation for Christmas 2027 will start on December 26 this year. Yes, we have a long lead time, so it's always a rewarding time of the year to see it all come together.
I guess what we see on the day on Christmas is the leg of ham, but tell me a bit about the production and the work that goes into, you know, making sure that the pork is right for Christmas.
Yeah, so a bit about us. Otway Pork is founded with a philosophy of producing pigs in paddocks. So we farm all of our animals in Western Victoria, and all of our sows and their piglets are born free range in beautiful country that is looking absolutely spectacular at the present point in time. And that approach to farming pigs on the land with a lower and slow philosophy as to how we grow those pigs out, we say delivers a better quality meat product. And in turn, we have designed a ham recipe to really showcase and bring forward, you know, the high quality meat from our pigs to make, you know, to try and deliver an excellent ham for Christmas. So we obviously get two legs per pig. So there is a process of preparation where we need to put legs aside throughout the year to ensure that we've got enough for this period to satisfy demand, which has been a little bit crazy, but really pleasing at the same time.
You also mentioned there you have like a free-range sort of production system there. Are all the pigs at the same farm in the same place?
Yeah, so we have a variety of farms, spread out through Western Victoria, with some breeder farms where we have our sow herd, and then also some grower farms for fattening the pigs out. So, we're close here to Geelong, and then spread all the way out to the South Australian border in the Eden Hope area.
And how many pigs would you say you have across all those farms?
We have lots of pigs, and it does vary from time to time. But we aim to sell about 1,500 to 1,800 pigs per week.
Are there many piggeries or pork producers in Victoria these days? I mean, I know we've got JBS, which is one of the bigger ones in Corowa, not too far from where I am in Wodonga. Is there many still left around the state?
Yeah, look, there's definitely been some consolidation, but there's absolutely still a number of piggeries littered throughout Victoria. You know, typically where there's grain available, there tends to be piggeries around as well.
And what sort of caused that consolidation, do you think? Is it kind of a hard business to be in, or?
Yeah, there's definitely been some challenges over the years in terms of our highest cost from a production perspective is feed, the feed input costs, and so wheat and barley are the key components of that. And so when we go back a couple of years ago, obviously at good prices for growers, but during the period where the Ukraine and Russia escalated, the cost of grain was significant during that period and made it a much more challenging period for us feeding livestock. However, fortunately, over that 20-month period, grain prices have softened and it's back to a much more economically sustainable model. So, we're really pleased to see the recent rain throughout Victoria. The countryside looks amazing, and we're definitely hoping that soft finish results in a really good crop for the region as well. From a supply perspective, that obviously helps us to get our hands on the grain, and so hopefully everyone can get a win out of that from a grower and the consumer perspective.
Yeah, so pigs obviously eat mostly grain, so that's like their predominantly their diet.
Absolutely, it is a wheat and barley are the key components that that we feed to the animals. So maybe other food types that we feed to pigs. You know, there's no, we don't feed scraps or anything like that. It is it's a tailored diet that our nutritionists spend a lot of time working on, so that we can keep the pigs healthy, get them growing at the rates that we'd like, and also manage the fat component for the pigs as well.
And I know another issue over the last recent years has been Japanese encephalitis virus, JEV. Is that still a concern at the moment?
Yeah, look, this time of the year, it's always front of mind. Many listeners will have heard the news in the last fortnight that JEV has been detected in Horsham, which is, close to some of our farming operations. So, we're on high alert. Given that our farming practices are outdoor, we're at significantly higher risk than conventional piggeries in sheds and the like. So we've taken all precautions that we can in that regard. It's something that we'll have to live with, unfortunately, until such time as there is a vaccine that's been developed for it.
Yeah, so vaccine for the pigs, for the animals.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and also for water birds and the like that are susceptible to it.
And lastly, Duncan, speaking of Christmas, any tips or advice for the best way to eat pork or ham on the day?
Look, I've got lots of advice. I'm generally regarded as being pretty good on the tooth, but my responsibility in the household is to get the ham to the Christmas table. And my wife does an exceptional job glazing and cooking our hams, but the keep it simple philosophy will never let you down, particularly for a ham. And if you're having a pork, a rolled pork or a roast, make sure you get it out in the fridge the night before to try and dry off the rind, and that's the secret to getting a really good, high-quality crackle.
That is very good advice, because the crackle is very important in a roast pork. That is Duncan Parry. He's the chief executive of Otway Pork, busy getting out all those Christmas hams today on Christmas Eve, having a quick chat with us there. He did also mention that detection of Japanese encephalitis virus around Horsham, that was at the start of the month, around December, did make me think to just check in about JEV vaccinations. According to vichealth.gov.au, they are still available and free of charge for eligible local government areas. So there's a whole bunch there. If you're interested, get on the website and have a look. It's like Benalla, Ganawara, Campaspe, Horsham, Mansfield, Wangaratta, Wodonga, Strathbogie, Mildura, Indigo. Lots of places. Get on there and have a look for a bit more information. Now, we are talking Christmas cracker jokes. Country Hour Christmas cracker jokes today on this fine Christmas Eve. Got a few people texting in some of theirs as well, but I did say one before that I didn't give you the answer to. It is, what do shrimp wear in the kitchen? A, prawns. Another for seafood one. What's an oyster's favourite band? Pearl Jam. I'm going to enjoy using those sound effects today. Keep them coming if you have any more Country Hour Christmas cracker jokes for us. 0467 842 722 is the text line number. Let's keep rolling, though, because it goes without saying, wine and cheese are a winning combination. But one Gippsland cheesemaker has gained global attention for an artisan blue crafted from the milk and grapes of their region. Faith Tabaluyan has this story.
Can't replace the manual stirring. Get into all those little clumps of curd that lead, separate them, and you can feel where the clumps are with your hands.
That's Burke Brandon, a cheesemaker from the South Gippsland town of Moyarra. He's busy making a batch of blue cheese, and I bailed him up as he was stirring the curds by hand.
And we have to get just the right moisture in the cheese for it to last for its 8 months maturation before it's ready to eat. If it's too soft, it won't keep for long enough. And, we have to get it just balanced right.
And you're doing everything with your hands, so you're literally, dipping your hands into the vat.
Yep, handmade is the best way to have a feel for the curd, and it's so delicate that it doesn't respond well to mechanical agitation at this point.
Daniel Hales is a fifth-generation dairy farmer from Moyara. He took over the Prom Country cheese business in 2022 and since then has dived headfirst into the world of cheese making.
I think anyone who produces food is always interested in what the next steps are in the chain, and then coming here and being a part of it, what's the word, like, you're more intrigued by it than you, the more you learn and the more you realise you don't know.
Over the past 3 years, Mr. Hales has developed a range of specialty cheeses inspired by his South Gippsland home.
Raw milk, Gouda style. We do Comac, which is a cooked curd style cheese with native pepper berries in it. And then St. Clair's a sort of your harder cooked style cheese, like Alpine style European cheese.
And so you named the Comac one after the town?
Yeah, all our cheeses are named after local areas. So St. Clair's a little district, you'd say Wattlebank is, Comac's a town, Glenmoyditt's the name of the farm, Inverloch's obviously a town. Yeah, everything has some sort of point of reference to it.
But it's the Inverloch blue cheese that's put this little cheesery on the world stage.
Recent Dairy Australia Awards, we won Champion Blue for Best Blue Cheese in Australia, and then we won the Grand Champion for Best Cheese in Australia for Inverloch Blue, which was a really, really nice honour and accolade. And then about a week later, well, we'd already sent cheese over to Switzerland for the World Cheese Awards, and Inverloch Blue won a Super Gold Medal at the World Cheese Awards and Best Australian Cheese. Super Gold Medal means it's in the top 1% of cheeses in the world. So I was in the top 100 cheeses at the awards, which was a really great honour and accolade.
Mm. Were you expecting this cheese inspired by the little town of Inverloch to take out all those titles? Or?
Not initially. You're hopeful that it's going to come out well. You're never quite sure because it was the first time we've made it and we're maturing it, so you're testing it along the way, and it was given all the right indications that it was going to be something pretty unique and special.
It takes about 1,000 litres to produce each batch of Inverloch Blue, with that milk coming from Mr. Hales' own herd of dairy cows. Once the milk is heated, strained, salted and pierced, the wheels spend about 4 months maturing in the cheese cellar. But Mr. Hales says the process doesn't stop there.
We actually handpick the leaves from our vineyard here at the front gate. We handpick them, wash them, then soak them in a fumé blanc, which is made from the vineyard, like just down the road, a couple hundred metres. And then we hand wrap the cheeses, and then they mature in that for about 5 months.
Mr. Hales says even before all the accolades, he knew they were onto a winner.
We'd done like a soft release, not everyone knew about it, sent it, I think we made 60 wheels. And when it sold out so quick, and it was a real, that's when we were interested to see how it actually got the awards, just because the public perception of it was quite strong.
But Mr. Hale says it might be a while before you get your hands on this award-winning blue.
So next year we're doing 3 releases. We're releasing 150 wheels in July, then we'll make it again in March, and we'll do 150 wheels for Melbourne Cup weekend, and then 150 wheels ready for Christmas.
Okay, you're already planning for next Christmas.
Yeah, you have to with our cheeses, because they take 6-7 months to mature, and ideally if we could get the blue out to that 7-8 months thereabouts, that's when it's sort of at its premium. So we're always, with all our cheese production, we're sort of looking at minimum 4-5 months ahead down to 6, and trying to judge your production schedules around that.
Blue cheese, that is delicious. That is Daniel Hales. He's a Moyara cheesemaker and a fifth-generation dairy farmer. Ending that story from Faith Tabaluyan, with additional reporting also by Madeline Stutchbury there. We're talking Christmas crackers. Speaking of cheese, cheesy jokes, we're talking Country Hour Christmas cracker jokes on this Christmas Eve. A few people texting them in on 0467842722. I'll read a few out for you, but first I've got to get a Christmassy sort of feeling going. There we go. That feels better. All right. What do you call a grain murderer? A serial killer. Also, I like this one. Why did the farmer win the Nobel Prize? Because he was outstanding in his field. Yeah, that's excellent. I'm also really enjoying going through our audio archive here, finding all these laughing sound effects and jingle bells. So I'm enjoying it. If you've got any Christmas Country Hour Christmas cracker jokes for us, 0467 842 722. We're trying to lighten the mood on Christmas Eve this year. I've got one more for you. This one is a classic one that my dad actually told me when I told him I got the job as the rural reporter. It is very rural. You need a bit of knowledge around what different kinds of sheep are, I think, to get this one. But it is, why couldn't the ewe fall pregnant? Why couldn't the ewe fall pregnant? I'll tell you after rural news. And we're joined this afternoon by Jane McNaughton. Good afternoon, Jane.
Good afternoon, Annie, and a very Merry Christmas to you and your family. As Queensland wraps up its winter grain harvest, trucks continue to arrive at receival sites across New South Wales and Victoria. GrainCorp Head of National Operations, Jason Shanley, says the weather has made this year's harvest a bit tricky, with strong winds across New South Wales and rain in Victoria. He says the quality of yields were pretty good despite all of this.
Victoria's still ticking along quite nicely. So I would say the northeast half of the state is close to being finished. We're definitely seeing probably better yields across Victoria than what anyone expected. I think the last kind of three or four rain events that occurred, and they weren't massive rain events, but there was enough to obviously keep the crops going and delivered some surprising tons across Victoria. So just kind of edging towards 2.5 million tons into the network. Still going quite strong in the Wimmera, probably some parts of the southern Mallee and the southern areas of what we call central Victoria. So, I think we'll definitely see some continued deliveries post-Christmas. And as we head down south towards Geelong and the southwestern districts, I think we'll be going well into January in those areas. But, it's been a challenging harvest in Victoria, particularly from a rain perspective, quite stop start, but the last kind of 10 to 12 days have been pretty good. We did get a pretty good run at it, but obviously some rain events over the weekend have held us up for a couple of days now, and hopefully we'll be back into it soon.
Farming waste may soon be used to create furniture and even build houses. Waste from crops including hemp, corn, rice and sugarcane is being tested to become renewable materials for the use of furniture and houses rather than being burned or discarded. Research fellow with the University of Melbourne, Dr. Ben Noir Belleville, explains the research.
We have some very promising results. So we've been looking at different applications, not only furniture, but also looking at building products. And with some testing, we have some very very promising results when it comes to acoustic properties, sound absorption properties, also insulation. So these crops have lower densities than you would see for timber, for example. So this can be an advantage where we can use them for different applications in your house. This can also be used for furniture applications. We've done some combinations of different materials using industrial hemp, but also the cornstalk to fabricate some cores for panels, which we can then laminate with different veneers or other materials, depending on the end application and the end use. Once the crops have been harvested, so for example, for industrial hemp, this is essentially grown to produce seeds, which will then be used to produce oil and other pharmaceutical products. Then we have the rest of the plant, the stalk, the herd, which we break down into smaller particles, smaller bits, and we can then mix them with different binders or glues, if you prefer, to produce panels for various applications.
And Annie, ahead of this year's festive celebrations, I would love to know, do you peel your own or like a pre-peeled prawn? Apparently the answer to that question can very much depend on what age you are. But whether you're a baby boomer, Gen Z or a millennial, Australians are expected to consume millions of kilograms of prawns this festive season. The Marine Stewardship Council has been doing some research into our prawn consumption habits. Their Senior Fisheries Standards Manager, Dr. Adrian Gutteridge, says it shows convenience is proving more important than price or sustainability.
Estimating about 18 million kilos of prawns eating over Christmas, which is a fairly substantial proportion of Australia's annual consumption. So yeah, a lot of prawns. 60% of Aussies will prefer to buy pre-peeled prawns so they don't have to do it themselves, which is something that, you know, my household, I grew up in a place where, you know, you peel your prawns and that's the ones you eat. So the more you peel, the more you eat. One of the other interesting findings was that even though, you know, 60% of people are looking for pre-peeled prawns, only about 16% are actually bringing sustainability into their sort of purchasing sphere when they're going to buy prawns. And, you know, from our perspective, we'd love to see that get higher, because at the moment there's about 2/3 of wild caught prawns in Australia that carry the MSC blue fish tick label. So it's kind of never been easier to buy sustainable prawns. So that's what we're really kind of pushing this year for people to do. Contrary to that idea that, the cost of living crisis is making people choose cheaper options, like, it's actually more expensive to buy pre-peeled prawns. So, you know, that kind of shows that the convenience of, you know, not having to deal with, I guess, shell and heads once you get home is probably more factoring in that purchasing thing. But, you know, when it comes to imported versus, you know, Australian wild-caught prawns, you know, the price difference isn't going to be all that much different, especially at, you know, your kind of bigger supermarkets.
And that wraps up today's Rural News.
Thank you, Jane. That's Jane McNaughton there with the last Rural News for this week, because we've got a couple of days off on the country. I will be back on Monday. Pre-peeled prawns. That's fun to say, isn't it, on the radio? That's a real tongue twister. Pre-peeled prawns. Let's head to the Weather Bureau now and find out what is happening with the weather. Heading into Christmas and into the weekend, we're joined by Lincoln Traynor, who's a senior forecaster at the Bureau. Hi, Lincoln.
Hello, Annie. How are you going?
I'm good. I'm a little stuck on pre-peeled prawns.
Pre-peeled prawns. I got it.
Well done. Well done. This is why you're on the radio, Lincoln. tell us a little bit about what's happening outside. It looks kind of sunny, but maybe some rain in Gippsland?
Yeah, not a lot. We're kind of dominated by a high-pressure ridge at the moment, but we have had a front cross to the south, not over the area, and that's kind of pushed up the winds a little bit. What is interesting at the moment, looking at the satellite picture, we do have some gale-force wind gusts around Wilson's Promontory for people out there, and there's some quite a bit of swell around. No, we don't talk a bit about that on Country Hour, but if you're out, you are a boatie out on the coastal waters, it is a bit dangerous today. We've got 3 to 4 metre swells and gale force winds out there. So hopefully everyone's staying safe. And there are some coastal wind warnings in force, so please check those. Beyond that, as you said, we do have the forecast of a slight risk of a shower. I don't think there's much in it today. There will be a little bit of grey skies across the south. Mostly sunny and clear across the north, but it is a cool to mild day. If we look at the top temperatures for Christmas Eve, Mildura 29, Horsham 25, Bendigo 24, Shepparton 27, Seymour 25, Wodonga 27, Ballarat 19, Warrnambool, the coolest, 18, Bairnsdale 23. If we go to Geelong, it's 21. For Christmas Day, it's pretty similar, a few degrees warmer in some spots, but generally pretty cooler. If we're looking at Melbourne, I know we don't like to talk about Melbourne, but we're going into the cricket, so some people care about it. It's going to be the coolest day since 2006.
Wow.
So it kind of gives you a sense of Christmas being cool in the south, if we're looking at the south at the moment. But for the north, it's still pretty mild, 27, Horsham 25, Bendigo 21, Shepparton 21, Seymour 19, Wodonga 25, Ballarat 16, Warrnambool 17, and Bairnsdale 19. So it's a few degrees cooler. It's a relatively cool Christmas. Some people say you could have a warm lunch or a cold lunch, depending on what you like.
No hanging out in the pool or the river or on the beach, though, I think. That's off for Christmas this year. Oh, my gosh. And leading on past Christmas, I guess into the weekend and next week, anything on the radar?
Yeah, I think, firstly, there's not much on the radar, which is probably good news if you're not looking for rainfall. We had a bit of that on Sunday. But it's kind of getting warmer. We've got a high-pressure system moving to the south of us. So as we go into Boxing Day, we're starting to see increasing sunshine across and a few degrees warmer across the state. Then onto the weekend, it's pretty much sunshine throughout the state, and we go into temperatures in the kind of low to mid-20s in the south, and we're starting to get into the high 20s in the north. Sunday will be looking like the warmest. Sunday, Monday is going to be hot in the north. So we get climbing back into the mid-30s and almost nudging 40 in Mildura by Monday. So we're starting to see some heat creep back in across the weekend, Annie.
Okay. Lincoln, anything else we need to be across or need to know at this point?
No, I think it's fairly mild and settled as we go across Christmas, warming up across the weekend, and just be aware of the coastal wind warnings at the moment.
Yeah, I'm sure the people out fishing not love hearing that about those coastal winds at the moment. Might be making things a bit hard for them. Lincoln, thank you so much. Have a great Christmas, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely, Annie. Take care.
Thank you. That is Lincoln Trainor. He's the senior forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology, giving us the latest information on the weather. Cold Christmas on the cards this year. It's not normal, is it, or usual? I don't know. I kind of like a hot Christmas. I was looking forward to going for a spin, but maybe I'll just have to wait a few extra days. You're listening to the Victorian Country Hours. Country Hour. We are talking Country Hour Christmas cracker jokes this afternoon. We're trying to lighten the mood on Christmas Eve and have a little bit of fun. And I don't like to pigeonhole people, but it does seem there are a few dads on the text line this afternoon, because they're coming in thick and fast, these Christmas cracker sort of punny jokes. Keep them coming. 0467 842 722. I left you with one that my dad told me. Why couldn't the ewe fall pregnant? Because she was under the weather. Love it. That's an Ian Brown special. We've also got, what's invisible and smells like bananas? Monkey farts. What do elves learn at school? This one's from Mitch. What do elves learn at school? The alphabet. I like that one. And Pete has texted in, g'day, what's blue and not very heavy? Light blue. Very good. Keep them coming. 0467 842 722. It's time to head to the farmers markets now, because in the Riverina in southern New South Wales, it has long been known as one of Australia's major food bowls. And with Christmas fast approaching, that reputation is on full display at the local farmers markets. Cara Jeffrey and Justina Buster went to the Wagga Wagga Market to find out more.
This festive season, the Riverina Producers Market is busy as shoppers make their final decisions about what will end up on the Christmas table. For many, it is a balance between cost of living pressures and the desire to buy fresh, locally produced food. Ashley Carrig from Hillview Farms in Batlow says buying direct from growers helps keep prices reasonable while maintaining quality.
So my partner and I own and run Hillview Farms. We own a farm in Batlow and a retail store in Adelong. And we have been at the growers market now for the last 6 weeks, and we grow a range of different things on our farm. We've got pumpkins, cherry tomatoes, cucumbers, zucchinis, watermelons, and we work with a lot of other local farms since we've moved down here. So we bought the farm 14 years ago, and then we were always living in Sydney, but we started doing farmers markets in Sydney initially with just what we were growing. That turned into what our neighbours were growing, and then my partner went searching for other farms, like towards Sydney, Gundagai, and then the outskirts of Sydney. And then the markets turned into a website where we do home delivery all over Sydney. COVID hit, the market stopped, our online orders went to 3,000 a week. It was madness. Anyway, April this year, we pulled the pin on Sydney. Our son's 9, and we just wanted to move for us quieter life, and so we moved down to the farm full time and opened the retail store in Adelong in June. Being that we are farm direct, like we're working directly with growers, it's cutting out that middleman, so things aren't extraordinarily expensive, and the quality is just so much better. The taste, like, that's why people keep coming back again and again. I mean, it just tastes better.
Ms Carrick says summer fruit has been particularly popular in the lead up to Christmas.
The stone fruit, cherries, peaches, nectarines, the apricots here are selling particularly well.
When it comes to Christmas essentials, she says there is one clear favourite.
Absolutely cherries. The cherries are spectacular. They're from young, Adelong Batlow. You can't get better.
Batlow apple and cherry grower Greg Mowat says the season has delivered high-quality fruit despite dry conditions.
Well, we've only just started picking cherries in the last 10 days. The crop this year is outstanding. It's one of those years where everything's come together. It is a dry year, but generally in dry years we grow better fruit. So this year's coming off. Great crop.
Mr Mowat says Batlow's climate plays a key role in fruit quality.
It's an ideal growing climate. It's got altitude, it's got cool nights, warm days instead of really hot days like we're getting here in Wagga today. So it's a great climate for growing really high quality fruit.
He says demand has remained strong heading into Christmas.
We tend to sell most of what we grow ourselves, so we're not reliant on the Sydney market. So our demand is always very good. We've been doing it for a long time, and dare I say it, we have a bit of a reputation for growing, you know, some good quality fruit. So we tend to get a lot of return business, and people are looking out for our product.
Mr Mowat says the Riverina offers a wide range of high quality produce.
Citrus coming out of the out around Leeton and Griffith is always an outstanding product. There's so much really high quality beef and lamb that's grown in this region. It used to be many years ago there were a lot more vegetables produced along the Murrumbidgee River, but not so much anymore. But a lot of olives, there's strawberries growing here in Wagga that are really high quality. I just think it's a great region. It's a very safe region climatically, and I think as a result of that you've got farmers that have been plying their trade for many, many years, and they're doing it very, very well. I think it's very underrated.
At the meat stalls, producers say Christmas favourites like ham are selling fast. Vendor Jason Bates, who farms at Stock and Bingle and also owns a butchery in Cootamundra, explains more.
Our main product we produce is we grow pigs outdoors on pasture, and they're all heritage breed, pasture-aged Hampshire and Berkshire pigs. Then we also grow chickens outdoors on pasture, a bit of grass-fed beef and grass-fed lamb. But our main thing is pork and chicken at the markets here, and it's our first full week or second full week here at the markets.
Yeah.
The hams are going pretty good. Can't beat pork. There's chicken over here, and we got a bit of chook as well. There's plenty of good things just in this market, but plenty to find locally.
Mr Bates says they do not compete with major supermarkets on price.
I guess what we'd say is we don't compete at all, because we're not comparing apples with apples. So everything we do costs us a lot more to produce. There's a lot more labour hours involved, and we've got to look after our people a lot better. That costs money, and to look at an animal every day costs money. So we do that. We don't falter from what we want to do and our beliefs and how we run our animals to try and save a dollar. And our customers will come to us over the big chains because that's what they want as well.
He says transparency matters to customers.
The produce has to be better, but also the story behind it needs to be true the whole way through. And that's why transparency is massive. And like our farm's right on a road, people can come to the farm. People have come to the farm, chefs and other butchers and such. Making sure that the product that is sold here matches what it says on the board or on the label. And then it will taste better and people will come back.
For shoppers, buying local is about quality and trust. Penny Scott from Canoundra, who was visiting Wagga Wagga, says farmers markets allow direct connection with growers.
I can look the growers in the eye. I can ask all those questions about how the products have been grown, how the piggies might have been raised in the paddock, how the chickens have been plucked. I can get down to that fine detail to know about animal welfare and also the methods and the care that go into raising all these beautiful animal products.
She says supporting farmers means looking beyond price.
Might be pricing, but the quality is nothing like what you can get here. It's not about scale. It's about the care at low volume and higher quality. So there's an economic paradigm in here as well. I'm not about cheap food. I have been a farmer, small-scale farmer, and to make a living, an equitable living, you actually need to include so many more of the externalities in the pricing of your food than what you ever get in supermarkets, who are just about to make a profit. They don't care what it is. They will just sell what they can to make a profit.
Another shopper, Joanne Wilson from The Rock, says health and longevity matter to her.
I'll go as healthy as I can go with really good quality produce. So I bought fruit and veg from here 2 weeks ago. We're just finishing off and it's still fresh, whereas the supermarket stuff goes off so quickly.
As Christmas approaches, many shoppers say supporting local farmers is worth it. Penny Scott says it comes down to values.
If we want to support farmers, we avoid the supermarket system. We come to farmers markets, we can buy online, we can support the smaller independent supermarkets who seem to have a little more flavour and taste about what they will have in their supermarkets. It's not about volume, it's about quality.
That's Penny Scott from Canoundra, ending that report from Cara Jeffrey with additional reporting from Justina Basta there. It's nice hearing that sounds from the market, isn't it? Like the sticky tape wrapping something up in the background. Let's keep going, though, because we don't talk about brandy enough, really, on the Country Hour. And an iconic Australian brandy label is actually celebrating its 100th distilling season this year, making it Australia's oldest family-run distillery. St. Agnes Distillery is still making brandy in the original copper stills at their Renmark site in South Australia's Riverland. St. Angus Joint Managing Director Richard Angove says the production process hasn't changed much in the past century.
You know, it's one of those things that there's no shortcuts in making brandy. It takes time and it takes patience and some serious craft as well.
This time of year, I'm thinking people are, you know, putting brandy into their Christmas puddings or maybe their brandy snaps. Is this a particularly busy time of the year for sales?
Yeah, absolutely. I hope that anyone making a Christmas pudding is putting a splash of St. Agnes brandy into it, and as well as those, you know, beautiful side dishes like your brandy butters. And then there's also the classic Christmas cocktail, the Brandy Alexander. And then a not-so-classic cocktail, but a lovely, refreshing, almost summer sort of cocktail, the Sidecar, which is a citrus-inspired sort of brandy-based cocktail. So a versatile product this time of year.
Yeah, lots you can do with it, as you say. Has it changed much from what, you know, people would have been drinking coming out of the distillery 100 years ago to today? I mean, has there been much of a tweak in what you're putting out?
I think consistency with our product has always stayed very much true to the way that we make our brandy. But I think people are certainly looking, rather than, say, the Brandy Alexander, which is a rich sort of creamy, chocolatey cocktail, a lot of people are looking for that more fresher, more vibrant cocktails. So that's where the Sidecar comes in, which is sort of lemon juice, Contro and St. Agnes brandy. And it just is, and you know, here in Australia in Christmas time, it's often quite hot. So that sort of fresh, cool cocktail is sort of becoming a little bit more fashionable.
The history of the distillery, obviously you're up to a number of generations now, but its beginnings, obviously these are, it's part of, as we say, South Australian history, but very much part of your family's history.
Yes, absolutely. So the first stills were actually put in Renmark in 1911, but it wasn't until 1925 when a gentleman by the name of Ron Hazelgrove, who was our distiller at the time, went to Cognac and learnt how they were making brandy in Cognac and came back and changed the way that we were making our brandy in 1925. And that's why we sort of celebrate the beginning of the St. Agnes Distillery as being 1925. And since then, we really haven't changed our production process at all. It's very traditional. It's sort of, you know, really focus on quality. And then there's the aging component of it, which is a lot of barrels sitting quietly in our barrel halls, quietly maturing the spirit and developing flavour and developing character. And consistency, I think, is really important. And that's that patience where, you know, you're distilling today to make a product that you're going to be selling in 30 or 40 years' time.
Mm. And that's, a leap when you're leaping into something that you know isn't going to be ready to go to the market for quite some considerable time. Obviously, this year we've talked a lot about trends in consumption, particularly with the wine industry is feeling it. Is brandy one of those ones that sort of comes in and out of fashion? Does it go in trends of whether people are consuming it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess it's quite a mature market. I often think that there's a brandy gene that goes off in people. When you sort of turn about 40 or 50 years old, you discover that brandy is a spirit of your repertoire. But certainly we've seen very consistent sales and an increase in sales in our particularly our XO brandies, so our 15-year-old, 20-year-old, 40-year-old, and we just released a 50-year-old XO this year to celebrate the 100-year anniversary. In that sort of XO luxury category, there's been some really nice growth. Which is good, and we're very fortunate to have a very loyal consumer group that are very, you know, I think people want to trust brands that have provenance and that have been around for a while and the consistent quality that we deliver. So we've got a really good base of loyal consumers.
100 years under the belt. So what is the future looking like?
I'd go back to consistency. So we want to continue to build stock because we need to be patient and plan for the future. And I guess that's, you know, we're five generations in the family business, and we're certainly looking out for the sixth and the seventh. And that was one of the things my grandfather did, was just every year commit to producing stock and putting it away. And that'll give future generations the opportunity to blend and bottle aged spirits, because our 50-year-old XO was distilled in 1970, 1971, and I wasn't even born then. My dad was 23 years old, and it was just, you know, that foresight of my grandfather to say, you know, this is stock that we're going to make, and we might be we'll be selling it in sort of 50 years' time. So we're certainly planning on continuing to build our stocks and produce exceptional brandy here in South Australia.
So there'll be a bit of brandy on the table for Christmas in the family this year?
Always, yes. The thing I love about brandy is the flavour and the way it accompanies chocolate. So chocolate and XO brandy go really, really well together. I think there's something like 500 flavour compounds in really good quality brandy, and there's something like 800 flavour compounds in good quality chocolate. And so you put those two together and you've got just a mouthful of absolute delightful flavour. So we'll have some XO on the table for sure.
That is Richard Angove, the Joint Managing Director at St. Agnes Distillery in South Australia's Riverland, which in 2025 has been celebrating its 100th distilling season, which is a remarkable effort. Hey, I got a text here from Dave in Lake Tyres. Hi, Dave. He's got some cooking tips. We were talking cooking pork before. He said, cooking roast pork, follow the directions exactly. Preheat the oven and adding water to the pan are important. And regarding the crackling, wipe over with white wine vinegar to aid drying and leave it in the fridge uncovered for 24 hours. And if all else fails that, there's always the air fryer. Thank you so much for that, Dave. I appreciate you looking out and giving us a few tips on how to get that pork crackling.
Each weekday at noon,
we created the first IVF kangaroo egg.
Tune into the Country Hour.
Grow a variety of different garlics.
Celebrating 80 years of telling rural stories.
It is better to be safe than sorry.
On ABC Radio.
I'm a little Christmas cracker, hanging on a Christmas tree. Just a little Christmas cracker.
We have been talking Country Hour Christmas cracker jokes this afternoon on this Merry Christmas Eve. You know, lighten up the mood a little bit. Why not? Thank you for everyone who's texted in. Rusty texted in. The other day I saw my neighbour dancing around his tractor in the nude, so I asked him what he was doing, and he said there was no romance between him and his wife anymore, so he went to his doctor for help, and the doctor told him he should do something sexy to attract her. Attractor. Thanks for that, Rusty. Appreciate that one. We've also got one here from Brendan. Hi, Brendan. He said, did you know the inventor of the knock-knock joke was the first to win the Nobel Prize? Very, very good. That is excellent. What's the most venomous thing at the North Pole? A centipede. Is this making you cringe yet? We've still got 30 seconds left of these. All right, one more. Why do cows wear bells? Because their horns don't work, obviously. I'll leave it at that. That's enough cheesy Christmas jokes for this afternoon. I hope it brought a smile to your face, and I hope you have a great Christmas. Thank you for listening to the Country Hour this week. We've got a couple of days off for Christmas and Boxing Day, and we'll be back Monday with more rural news here on the Victorian Country Hour. Thank you to Jane McNaughton as well for her production this week. Have a great Christmas, stay safe, and have a great time. Talk to you Monday.
A banger, that's me.
Woo-wah.
That's me.